came when I was out. How can I know when I can go out or not? I have to have that part soon to fix me road train. We're out here at Richmond. Can you come again today?
I'm sorry, sir. Could I ask you to repeat that, please?
Can you not understand me? I need that part today. I'm in Richmond.
Let me check the system for you. Could you spell your name for me, please? Welcome to Connected Communication. I'm your host, Christine. I was working in a call centre for a logistics firm in a town called Erskineville, just outside Sydney, when I heard Australian Outback accents for the first time. And I couldn't understand half of what they said. Most of the calls were complaints about missed deliveries, so not being able to understand the customers made for some pretty challenging conversations. Keeping them happy while trying to find their details on the system was not very easy. Over time, my ear became more and more attuned or accustomed to the sounds and shapes they made, and I began to hear the vowels more easily. But it took time to learn. I had to ask them to slow down and repeat some words. I also had to speak very slowly for them at times, so they could follow what I said. We had to articulate clearly for each other. This was way back in 2008, long before I'd attuned my ear to international accents. I'd been on holidays outside Ireland before, and I'd studied Spanish, but I'd never travelled for this long. I'd studied the classification of English speech, but from a British RP perspective, growing up embarrassed by what I now embrace as my wonderful Dundavin lilt, a blend of Dundalk and Navan that my adult self is proud to own as an accent. Dundalk is a town on the northeast coast of Ireland, between Dublin and Belfast, birthplace, as the stories go, to Cuchulainn, and close to the hills upon which the Dun Cuailne, the brown bull of Cooley, is said to have roamed. You can still climb Maeve's Gap, the ridge cut into the mountain by Queen Maeve's soldiers as they wound their way up to Cooley to steal the bull. Navan is inland from Dundalk in County Meath, the Royal County we call it. To me, it's one of the most beautiful places in the world, where you can sit atop the hill of Slane and still see over to Tara. I tone my accent down for the podcast most of the time, articulating with deliberation, firmness, intentional distinctness, accuracy and fluency, the five factors which form favourable articulation. It's funny, reading my notes and the books I used when training, when I'm preparing for these episodes, they're written from the posh British RP perspective. There's a deep sense of imperialist English judgment of any accent or pronunciation other than that of the Queen, or now the King. One line reads in the book, "Slovenly articulation makes speech incomprehensible." Slovenly means careless or excessively casual. In other words, speaking without a pole up your hole, as we might say in Ireland. This particular book is from the 1970s, so the language in it is a bit old British mannish. This kind of attitude was actually bred into me. I started training at 7 years old. I've had to recondition my thinking and regularly check my bias. What's maddest is I'm most biased against myself. When I hear a strong Dundalk accent or a Navan twang come out of me, I shiver. It's better now, it's much improved than it was a few years ago. It's a terrible thing to feel disgust at your own voice and accent. And anyone who's listening to this from Navan or Dundalk, believe you me, I'm not knocking you one bit. It's just what I was raised in, it was a conditioning that I've had to check myself out of. It's been a great lesson to me in how not to judge others' accents. Or well, more honestly, in how to check my judgment and to see the person behind the accent. I had great friends from what's considered one of the worst estates in Dundalk when I was younger. And I've not met better people. I've certainly met much worse from some of the most highly regarded areas of Ireland. There's a lot of people going around saying these days that your accent is your identity. I almost commented on a LinkedIn post the other day to disagree with someone who stated it. Then I stopped myself.
I wanted to make sure I articulated my argument clearly if I was going to make one. As I was preparing my words for this episode and writing what I said before about accents, my accents, Dundalk and Navan, and how I toned them down for the podcast, I was going to write, I toned them down most of the time. They're still there, part of me. And then I got to thinking about the identity idea. I lived in Navan until I was 7, but I worked there until I was 16, and some of my family still lives there. I lived in the countryside outside Dundalk until I was 25. Some of my family is still there. I was born in neither Dundalk nor Navan, but I identify as being from both. My accents are a part of me, yeah, but they're not my identity. Because attaching identity to an accent means attaching bias to it too. And that's a dangerous game to play. Where are you from? A man from Galway asked me recently. I can't really do the Galway accent. Dundalk. His head darted upwards in a nod of, huh? Sure, we all have our troubles, he said. It's not the first time I heard it, and it won't be the last. But the second I hear it, I have no interest in talking to you anymore, and my respect for you drops lower than my toes. I have to hold my tongue. Held my tongue is an old phrase used in Ireland to tell particularly young women to stop talking or hold back their opinion. Held your tongue, young one. What I'd like to say is, oh yeah, and what troubles do I have being from Dundalk then? But I don't. It's a deliberate act of inarticulation. Not that I lack the ability to articulate clearly what I want to say, I'd just find it difficult to articulate it in a way that didn't cause insult. And sure, one insult doesn't nullify another, does it? I met another lad last year from Northern Ireland who was considering accent coaching because he'd recently been promoted and his colleagues in Boston were already showing bias against his ideas because of his accent. A dumb paddy, or something along those lines, was the feeling he got off them. By labelling accent as identity, we give permission for judgments like these to stick. Now, you might be saying to yourself, I don't judge people based on their accent. Let's see, shall we? When I read the following sentences, what feelings or thoughts do you notice come up? I just like landed like a really big client for like my law firm that's like gonna bank me over like 6 million. If it's not too much trouble, I would prefer a morning meeting. I tend to tire in the afternoons. I have 10 more people to call before I close up today, but the calls are going well. I don't like the way the team is being run. It's important that we collaborate more closely to achieve the goals that we have set out. Depending on your first language or languages, you'll have felt different feelings and thought different thoughts when you heard each of those different sentences. You'll have judged each of those accents differently. Now, if you're someone who speaks in one of those accents and I've absolutely butchered it, I'm sorry. I'm not technically accent trained. I'm doing what my ear knows and what my mind offers me in sounds. Now, well, I do train myself a wee bit before I do the episodes if I'm going to do something intentional and I can't get the accent right, just to, you know, to do my best for you to sound as good as possible. Before we're born, we start judging accents and languages, trusting the languages and accents we hear more often. It's a form of social preference in the brain. Very interestingly, we also choose accent over race. We're wired to choose that which is familiar. In a study, 5-year-olds chose the skin colour that matched theirs when asked to indicate the children they preferred in a photo layout. But when accent was added, their preferences shifted. The children preferred those who shared the same accent, regardless of race. Now, I think this is really interesting, right? And I haven't delved into my thinking on it, but when you think about the development of children, right? We start seeing colour properly in full at 4 months. But we hear sounds in the womb
there was another research study done on one word that was played to babies while they were in the womb. And then when the babies were born, they were tested on babies that heard the word and whether or not they responded to it. And only the babies that heard the word in the womb responded to the word. So we hear sounds in the womb. We start to pick up and pay attention to languages, rhythm, accents that are familiar from the womb. But we only see colour at 4 months. That study, to me, is very interesting. Five-year-olds chose skin colour. I'd love to see what happens with two-year-olds or three-year-olds and if they see the skin colour. Because I reckon that five-year-olds are choosing skin colour because they've learned that racism, and that racism is learned, but accent bias is innate. Accent bias is innate. We choose and go towards that which is familiar. But accent bias is not the same as accent association. So what I mean there is, we're biased, like I said, towards that which is familiar. It's a safety mechanism, a social construct in the brain. But when we associate accent with certain things, that's a different type of bias. The accent I attempted at the start of this episode was what's called a broad Australian accent, or Strian, apparently, shortening of the word Australian. The people who speak it are often called Ockers, an Ocker, we might say, or Bogans, Bogan. I think I pronounced that right, a Bogan. Anybody who's been to Australia will have heard the word Bogan. Bogans tend to be looked down upon in Australia. There's a severe judgment or bias against them. Lots of news clips of lofty Australians associating education with the Bogan accents. Bogan being more regional accents. The brain categorises things, breaking concepts into chunks and storing them in different areas for later recall. People determine what is trust or threat based on this categorisation. We're more inclined to trust, like I said, that which is familiar. And the brain then doesn't like to work hard either. So something that's familiar is more easily recalled. This keeps uncertainty low in the brain, which means a threat response isn't triggered. Things which are unfamiliar create uncertainty, which in turn triggers a threat response. To give you a simple example, in Ireland, we drink milk in tea. Many countries think this is absolute madness altogether. When we offer them milk and tea, they look at us sideways, uncertain as to our sanity. We can raise a bit of a threat response. As we grow up, our brains become conditioned to the social status and stereotypes tagged onto accents. One study conducted back in the mid-1980s found that a person's accent was, or could be, detected within 33 milliseconds. It's not online anymore, so it might have been refuted. I used to make a hobby of figuring out where people were from based on their accents. I'd sit in cafes and just listen, on buses, anywhere I went, trying to pull a nationality. Not for bias or judgment, but to teach myself the different mouth movements and sound shapes that were articulated in different languages. It made me a better pronunciation teacher then and a pronunciation coach later. Researchers say accents tie us to our identity in a similar way that gender and race does. And to me, these are all identity labels we choose to wear. I'm not a big fan of brands. I don't seek them out. I'm actually not even sure I own any famous brands. Oh, maybe an Acer. I have an Acer computer. Nonetheless, people are branded by their accents, automatically. RP speakers have traditionally been considered well-educated and more intelligent than their non-RP counterparts across England. The biases in England are rife. In a wonderful twist of fate, though, they love our lilt, rating the Irish as having the nicest twang. That doesn't mean we'll get their jobs, mind you. I suppose, though, still, at least we're allowed into the pubs with our dogs these days. There's so much interesting research in the area of accent association. One poll in 2013 found that the Devon and received pronunciation accents were seen as the most trustworthy. I think it was 4,000 people in the poll. and the Liverpudlian and Cockney accents were the least trustworthy. I love the Liverpool accent, so I had to throw a wee bit of it in there. The scores were similar for intelligence. But here's where it gets very interesting. A further study done in Plymouth University found that trust shifted and changed based on perceptions and judgments which were altered after certain behaviour was exhibited by the accent holders. Let me break that down. When, for instance, the Liverpudlian behaved in a trustworthy manner, trust increased in the Liverpudlian, in the person with the Liverpool accent. When someone from Southern England, who had been deemed trustworthy initially, behaved in an untrustworthy way, they were then seen as even less trustworthy than the untrustworthy other accent holder. It was almost as if, because the Southern English accented person hadn't met the expectations of the person who was hearing them in their behaviour, that they were being punished for it. They were being seen as less trustworthy, even less trustworthy. So this shows that our biases can change based on contact and exposure to different accents. We familiarise ourselves to them. When something becomes more familiar, it becomes less uncertain. Accent association exists across all cultures and professions. Americans deem British accents more trustworthy than Indian, whilst those with Mexican and Greek accents are perceived as less intelligent than people who spoke standard US English. Regional German accents were perceived as having lower competence and higher ability than standard German accents when tested using identical content statements in job interview contexts. And more recently, an SAP study done in 2023 found that 1 in 5 business travellers, and this was done in the APAC region, again about 4,000 people, felt that they have been denied work trips because of their accents. On top of this, so-called, and I hold my fingers up beside my ears in many quotations here, if you've ever heard any of my other content, you'll know that I call for the abolition of this term. I cannot stand it, but it's what people understand. Non-native English speakers are often viewed as less competent and may not be given opportunities over their less accented counterparts. One organisation even went so far as to say that they had an internal rating system based on people's accents to choose people to attend events and speak at them and represent the organisation. Another 2023 study in the UK found that 77% of people in creative industries, so an industry like one of mine that I'm in, being a creative in the podcast industry, feel they have to change their accents to be taken seriously. Now, in all truth, I'm not changing mine to be taken seriously. In fact, when I get very serious, my Dundalk really does come out. But my articulation is strong, sharp and clear. 35% of those in that study had been told to change their accents when dealing with clients. 62% of them were taught by teachers from a young age that they must speak better to be successful. Now, I'm not going to blow open what it means to speak better, because that word better, just, I might do a full podcast episode just on the word better, better and best, because they're just, oh, anyway, right, I'm not going down that road now. Teachers in the UK have been asked to modify their accents to sound less regional because they're seen as sounding less educated. At the same time, other people perceive them to sound more relatable, whilst the posher accents are seen as colder. Even the Queen was toning down her accent in the final years of her life. The Queen of England, I mean. We're now, in fact, even seeing a positive discrimination happening around English accents. Just this week, a former British journalist, Jan Leeming, said she believes she can't get work
because of her RP accent. What was mad was when she was being introduced on the mini interview video she did, her interviewer called himself Common as Muck, expressing his surprise at being put on the telly box. Now, I felt my bias come up when I heard him say the words telly box. I was like, what the fuck does he mean telly box? But I think actually he was being intentionally regional by saying the word telly box. I haven't looked it up. Association of abilities with accents is elitist. It comes from the elite classes. It comes from the exclusion of access to education. Language was used as a weapon. In Ireland, the Irish were banned from speaking the Irish language. The English language was made the language of education, so only the people who had money could afford to be educated into the language. It was a power play. People weren't given access to elocution. They weren't given access to training unless they had the money to pay for it. It's elitist. It limits alternative behaviours and goes back way, way, way further than we probably even realise, this historical elitist exclusion. But it's also still happening. In the same week as that Jan Leeming is saying she believes she can't get work because of her RP accent, this guy called Amol Rajan, I think I have the pronunciation right, who is the new presenter of University Challenge, has come out to say that because of complaints from, I'm going to call them judgmental pricks, who watch University Challenge about his use of the letter H. It's fucking H, right? Well, it's H in Ireland. Oh, I'm getting a bit leery now. I better tone it down a wee bit. That's a good example. If you're wondering what I mean when I say tone it down, go back to last week's episode and listen to me talk about tone and the emotion that shows in tone. You should have heard me sitting up straighter there in my chair as I was talking about historical elitism and access to language and the weaponry used of language. I got a bit annoyed, as I do. I can't stand people not having access to education, especially if they want to get access to it and learn. That's why my online platform is available, but I'll come back to that in a minute. So this fella, Amol Rajan, has come out to say that because of these complaints, to appease the complainers, he is going to change what has been his accent for whatever the 40, 50 years of his life it has been, and change his H for an H. I posted on LinkedIn, asking him not to do it. I don't know if he's seen it. But what's the solution? While researching for this episode, I read an article which advised professionals who have an accent, particularly those, again, with this term, non-native English speaker, to tag in a non-accented English speaker in business meetings with prospective clients, leaning on them to do most of the talking. Quote, let the prospective partner know there are plenty of native English speakers in combination with your own depth and breadth of experience, it said. I don't like this advice at all. A recent client I took on is concerned about their accent when pitching for finance. They're from the same place as me. And this is where I find myself in a bit of a dilemma. I'm hired by organisations, like the ones in APAC that I mentioned before, to help their staff become more intelligible. But I'm very, very careful about how we work together. Accent and articulation are not the same thing. Like I said a few minutes ago, I'm articulate when speaking here. My accents are also abundantly clear. I have a mix of them, depending on the emotions that arise as I speak and how much deliberate accuracy I articulate my speech with. If you listen back to a few minutes ago when I got a bit leery, you'll have heard more of my twang come out. But this is why I said I have my online platform. There are people out there who experience this bias every day, who have to alter how they sound to be given access to business trips, to presentations, to certain meetings, to even sit at certain tables. And I believe that everybody should have access to that kind of content, that kind of training. So the Connected Communication resources that I have available as a support platform on this podcast allow you to adjust your articulation and to develop your public speaking voice, if you so choose to. By supporting it, by joining the content, joining the resources, it also helps me keep making this podcast for you and for everyone else who doesn't have the money to access the platform or indeed to access elite speaking programs. So do please have a look at the link in the show notes, or go to languagecouragecoaching.com and you'll find it on there. It's very cheap. It's not cheap. It's designed to be highly affordable. It's designed to cut through the bullshit of the elitism, the elite exclusive practice of people having to pay thousands to access this kind of training. I've combined over 30 years of training in speech, English language teaching, neuroscience into about, it's got about 25 hours on the platform now of audio and video content that you can listen to on the go. That will help you to adjust your diction, your clarity, your public speaking voice, not necessarily change your accent. I don't want to sell that I help you anglicise your accent. I bloody well don't. Unless you really want me to. I have been asked to. After a few sessions working on it, my client beautifully determined they were quite happy to speak with vocal clarity using their own accent. They're now one of my biggest promoters, given the success of the work we did together. Articulation and clear diction are not the same as accent adjustment. We worked on clarity, vocal articulation, story shaping in tours, talks and presentations, confidence in communicating as the only foreigner in the room, standing tall in the bubble of bias, bursting through it, being seen, heard and ultimately promoted. That's what I do with clients. So today, I'm going to share with you another mini lesson from the platform on articulation. The five key aspects, with examples of slovenly speech with respect to each aspect, and a couple of exercises. Achieving clarity of diction doesn't mean you lose your accent. It means you shape your sounds clearly and crisply. Once you speak clearly and confidently, using appropriate modulation techniques, oozing an air of confidence in your posture and vocal production, people don't notice your accent. Or they might. But instead of their negative biases spiking, their positive ones will. And they'll lean in. So up next, a wee mini lesson on articulation. For the crack, I've put a link in the show notes to a video from the articulation exercises section of the platform. They help you make your tongue stronger. It's a muscle, in case you didn't realise. I just thought it'd be a bit of fun. They're a bit mad, but sure, it's crack. And it gives you a little snapshot on top of the audio of some of the videos that are inside the platform. So go on there. If you're interested in improving your diction, to pitch for investment, podcast, present at work or speech on stage, what you hear next is one of the first places to start. Welcome to this quick audio, which accompanies the PDF in the What is Articulation lesson. I'm going to talk through the PDF, giving examples where I can, and also showing you that it's natural for people to make mistakes. I will practice what I preach. I will ensure that I speak as clearly and deliberately as possible when I'm doing the lessons. But you're not here to hear somebody pretend to speak the way they don't normally speak. You're here also to learn how to hear somebody use English in a way that it's naturally used. So you're going to hear me make mistakes. You're going to hear me slip on my articulation at times. And that's fine. If you hear it and you notice it, let me know, because that's a great thing for you to be noticing. Because when you start to notice these natural errors that people make, you can then understand what they're trying to say in real life. And the reality is that
You're going to communicate with people in settings where you don't have the ability to say, excuse me, could you articulate yourself more clearly, please? As I'm sure you know, most and even many native speakers really don't focus on articulation. Precise articulation lives in all languages, not only English. There are many definitions. I've chosen to use the Google Dictionary because it's easy for me to snapshot the definitions. If you work for Google, please don't give out to me. But also because Google uses the Oxford American Dictionary. So it's trustworthy. If I don't trust a definition when I see it, I do look it up in other places. Meaning one. The formation and clear and distinct sounds in speech. So in other words, how we articulate vowels and consonants. Meaning two. The action of putting into words an idea or feeling. So in other words, how we articulate our feelings and our ideas. Now in this lesson, we're only going into definition one. There's a lot more to the articulation of our feelings and ideas. Context matters, the situation itself, the relationship. And that's really more for one-to-one or more intimate, maybe small group coaching. Articulation. Both vowel and consonant sounds are important to speech clarity. Consonants play a vital role. They're responsible for the framework of words and therefore are very important to clarity and expression and meaning. Try saying, get six people in a taxi, using just the vowel sounds, to someone who has never seen the sentence. So for example, e-e-e-e-a-a-a. Do you think they'd be able to guess the meaning? Conversely, change the vowel sound to the schwa and then say it. Can your listener guess the meaning now? Gut sux pipel an a tuxa. Do you see? When I've reduced the vowel sound to just the schwa, but you can hear the consonants, it's much easier to guess the meaning. So, we need consonants. We need clarity of consonants to make sure that we can understand. There are five elements to good articulation. The first is accuracy. Accuracy means correctly forming consonants on the organs of articulation. Now, if that doesn't mean anything to you, I will give an example in a moment. And when you've done the organs of articulation and vowel and consonant exercises in these lessons, you'll understand a little bit more what I mean here. Two, distinctness. This is dependent upon the distinction between the vocal and aspirate consonants. Again, example coming in a moment. Firmness. Firmness refers to not slacking or exaggerating consonant sounds. Four, fluency. Fluency is the neat movement from one consonant to the next without breaking the smooth flow of delivery. And five, deliberation. And this means the careful choice of a rate of delivery or pace to allow the correct and easily recognisable formation of all consonants. A little phrase that my mum taught me when I was very, very young that I've never forgotten. Do not speak more quickly than you can articulate clearly. Now, I've never forgotten the phrase. That doesn't mean that I haven't forgotten to implement it, especially when I get excited. So, examples. What happens when we neglect good articulation? Let's take the sentence example. My father lives with my brother in an old attic. Accuracy. My father lives with my brother in an old attic. Now, I know I sound a bit British when I say that, but this comes from, to be honest, a book with British English. And I can't really avoid doing that accent when I say that sentence like that. Let me try. My father lives with my brother in an old attic. So what's happening here? The TH and the V are being mixed up. The D is being dropped at the end of old, and there's a glottal stop being used in the word attic. It's happening in the throat. Distinctness. My father lives with my brother in an old attic. And here we have the difference between the aspirate and the voiced consonant. F and V. They're both spoken in the same place in the mouth, but one of them comes from the voice and one of them comes with just air. And then we have D and T as well. D, T, the same thing. Firmness. So this is where we have the exaggeration or the slackness. My father lives with my brother in an old attic. So I'm sure you can hear there where I'm over-exaggerating the sounds. Have you ever heard anyone speak like that? Fluency. This is where we go into thought grouping, choosing the correct way to group our words in phrases. And it's really important to do this correctly because this also works with how the brain hears and how the brain categorizes language. So, for example, my father lives with my brother in an old attic. Do you hear the stilted break up of the flow of that sentence? If I'd said that to you for the first time, how easy would it have been for you to follow it? And finally, deliberation. Remembering that this is about the pace with which we speak so that the consonants are easily recognisable. My father lives with my brother in an old attic. So there, the message is quite unclear. It's fast. It's too fast to allow for the correct placement of the consonants on the organs of articulation. Why is articulation important anyway? Well, it improves speech clarity. It increases the comfort of your listener. It makes speech much easier to follow and therefore increases the comprehension of the message. This has been an accompaniment to the PDF on what is articulation. In the last page of the document, you'll see an exercise. I hope you enjoy practicing and I look forward to hearing your attempts at improving your articulation as you work through the articulation membership.
There you are now. If you'd like a PDF of the articulation lesson, find me on Instagram at connected_communication. So the name of the podcast with that underscore, that little line down below letters. And send me a DM and I'll send you access. Remember too, you can also join the resources platform and get access to all this training, plus way more, for a few euros a month. I do this because I love it and I want to make an impact on people's lives who otherwise couldn't afford this type of training. The more of you who support me by signing up, the more I can keep standing up against these attitudes, helping you develop at the same time and working towards access for all to what has previously been elite-only elocution education. You do not have to align to the identity another person prescribes you. You don't have to align with any labels at all if you don't want to. Nonetheless, you will have to deal with them and the challenges that come with that. How you do so is determined by you. As always, thanks for listening. Go Gian K. Durella. Until next time, Banach T. Agus Buecus. Can you come again today? Oh, I need that part to fix me right trying. Yes, sir. I'm pleased to say we can. Your road train will be turning up dust again in no time. Oh, thanks, mate. Let's rip her.